anyway, Prabhupada has this. Prabhupada has in his purport this much ignored sentence: "There's no necessity of tracing out the history of when the living entity desired this." But the fact is that as soon as he says there's no sense in tracing out the history, again, when this came up in I think 74 or 75, and he wrote a letter, attached a document to Madhavisa to explain this whole thing, and he used this the example of the crow and the tall fruit about arguing over and over a long time about something that cannot be settled. A tall is it's like Talaran, a kind of a palm. It's a palmyra palm. So these two sages sitting there, and they noticed a crow alight on the branch of the palm tree, and simultaneously a fruit fell down, and the crow flew away. So there was a huge dispute of whether the crow's alighting on the branch and flying up again caused the fruit to fall, or whether the fruit falling caused the crow to leave, went on forever. It's an example of a question that cannot be settled by argument. And said we shouldn't waste time on this. But the, volumes of ink and forests of paper have been slaughtered for this, on this question. He said that's weird. But one thing is, I thought I would show you. I found this, I was just reading this new translation, I guess it's a new translation, Jiva Dharma. And in this is Sarvabhavana's translation. In the very first chapter, this is Bhaktivinoda Thakur speaking just what Prabhupada says. Servitorship to Sri Krishna is the Nitya Dharma, the eternal Dharma, of the Jiva, and when the Jiva, somehow or other, turns away from Krishna, this change of attitude is tantamount to, means equivalent to, rejection of the Lord and His service. From the point of this occurrence, the jiva is subject to the dominion of maya because of his neglectful ignorance and consequent forgetfulness of the Supreme Lord. Furthermore, upon entering the material world, this is interesting, upon entering the material world, the jiva brings with him no historical record of this fall, as this fall originates outside the purview of material time, thus justifying the use of the phrase anadi bahirmukha. Beginninglessly, in terms of material time, turned away from the spiritual realm. That's exactly Prabhupada's account. It's like when you come, it's like you were always here. You just can't trace it out. And Prabhupada always says nityadharma means you cannot trace out the beginning. He doesn't say there was no beginning. He says it all the time. You cannot trace it out.
Yeah. So the thing is, if the Lord did not want the creation of the material world, and he's creating it in reaction to Jiva's desires, sinful desires, then when you're here, and when you're stuck here, and it seems so interminably difficult to overcome it. So
Durabja, it says that. It says it's Durabja, yeah.
Yeah. So, in other words, it seems like such a cleverly made prison household, if you want to get one that way. He's made it really hard for us to tell. See?
Not really. Not really. You have to understand that. It really, what's happening is a satisfaction of our desires. And so you have to come down to our desires and our feelings. As soon as we turn toward Krishna, and I think that turning toward Krishna we may not even realize what it is, but then immediately things start to happen when we get out. Yeah. But you can see how it's because of the freedom of the jivas that Krishna doesn't interfere with it. Why, when he comes to the material world, he has to act sometimes in such, well, somewhere it said that the Lord of the world, he moves forward like a snake. No, it's not like this, it's like this. This and this. Well, like, for example, you know, why in order to restore Dharma did there have to be a battle with Kurukshetra? Wasn't there some other way to do it? But all the while, he's acting in such a way as to not compromise the freedom of the jivas. And so that's how he has to work. Anyway, let's go on to the next text. The illusion living entity. Yeah, the one we're talking about in the previous verse appears in so many forms. Bahurupa, offered by the external energy of the Lord. While enjoying in the modes of material nature, Ramamano Guneshu, Asya, he misconceives, thinking in terms of I and mine. This is Mamaham Iti Manyate. We had this phrase Mamaham in the last chapter. Mamaham, my and I. This is the phrase here. What happens? This is what illusion is. This is thinking of in terms of I and mine. So Prabhupada first talks about the Bahurupa, the Bahurupani. There are many forms. And here he gives these numbers of 1,100,000 worms and reptiles and so on. These come from the Padma Purana. Sometimes Prabhupada calls species. Here he says so many forms, but these usually species. I looked up to finally found a quote in Sanskrit, it's jati. There's so many jatis. Jati is the word in India used for, usually translated as subcaste. And endogamous occupational group. It's a group that does a particular occupation, cleans streets, does office work, some particular occupation, and they only marry within their group. That's a jati. So that's the word that's used here. It's not, may not be species as, you know, conceived in modern systems of classification, but This is the numbers. Anyway, there's a lot of them. And so that's one example of changing different species as one transmigrates in the other. It is from childhood to boyhood, boyhood to youth to old age, another body. The living entity creates his own body by his personal desires. And the external energy of the Lord supplies him the exact form, by which he can enjoy his desires to the fullest extent. When you look at the insects and animals, you have to think, there's somebody in there and they're having fun. This is what they wanted. Yeah.
Because the species means Brahmanas is one species, doesn't matter which color of skin you are, or doesn't matter which nationality you are, and Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, Shudras, this is four types of civilized human beings. So is it really So, is it correct what he's doing?
I'm not sure.
Well, it's jatis.
They're jatis, yeah.
Yeah, but there's tons of Brahmins. But there's
more jatis, at least in India. There's jatis within the Kshatriyas, within the Brahmanas, within the Vaishyas. But I don't know how they use the word. If this jati is a modern Hindi usage, and I don't know.
But jati also in logical Sanskrit means like the equivalent of an Aristotelian form. Gopa is a jati.
Cowboys, yeah.
So, in the class, for example, not all Chinese is one jati, and
they're called. I'm not sure. It says there are 400,000 species of humans, jatis of humans.
How did you make the connection between that verse in the Bhagavad Gita and jati?
What verse in the Bhagavad Gita?
Sorry, that was in the Bhagavad Gita. This is Bhagavad Gita. I say I'm here, 8,400,000 species, and I was in the Bhagavad Gita. You said, Prabhupada said species, but then you said you did some research or something.
Well, this verse that I've got right here, these numbers come from the Padma Purana.
Yeah.
And somewhere I saw the Sanskrit. Because I was curious about what was the word that he translates as species, and this is jati. Well, but I don't understand your question. How do I recognize
it? Because the verse, I don't see jati in the verse from the Padma Purana.
From the Padma Purana?
Jalaja Navalakshmi, Stavra Navalakshmi, 9 lakhs, water, Stavra Navalakshmi.
I'm not sure where I saw it.
Jalaja Navalakshmi, Stavra Navalakshmi, Shadi. From my room, we would get some Kya, Akshinam, Nashim Akshinam, Timshal Akshinam, Timshal.
That's the Vishnu Quran?
Yeah, there may be different verses.
Somewhere, is that all verse? Is that from the verse book?
No, that was in Chaitanya Charitamrita Madhyam Lila
1931.
Let's look at the verse book.
We had to track this down, right? I'll turn this off so there's the verse. Maybe I'm wrong. No, I saw it.
I'm working on
it. I've heard this question asked 10 times to 10 different people, and nobody comes up with an answer. Exactly what is it? How much does a human form value human forms? How many human forms are on this planet? And everybody comes up with it.
Yeah, but it's just that somewhere I saw jati. I looked it up and I saw. I thought it might have been in the verse book or something. One of these verse books that we have.
I heard so many different versions.
But it's true that these quotations appear in different Puranas. You know, they're repeated.
There's 400,000, huh?
This says Padma Purana here.
The same.
But I don't see jati in here either.
How about that one?
I don't know where I found it. Jalaja Navalakshani.
That's
Stavara Lakshadimshti. Same verse. Given my old Luke is up. But see, doesn't there with the word. This is the list of the numbers. I think that there's more to this quotation and it's not all here.
Something
before or after. This says Padma Purana. In the first book. Well, somewhere when this was quoted, it had the word jati. I don't know where. But anyway, that's not really the issue.
Oh, this is where you got it from.
Where did I get it from?
Prabhupada, or possibly. Anyway, Prabhupada's giving a Bhagavad Gita lecture on Bhagavad Gita 143. He's
says, simply just imagining, taking some whims from the Padma Purana, Brahma-Mahārtaka, Ashi-Tings-Shantvaram-Schayata, Jiva-Jatishu, Lakshan-Stan-Jiva-Jatishu. Okay, skip that, okay. So, Ashi-Tings-Shantvaram-Schayata, Lakshan-Stan-Jiva-Jatishu. There are 8,400,000 types of Jiva-Jatis.
Yeah.
Doesn't say
where
they are.
Yeah,
so he cites
Bhagavad Gita,
then he
says Bhagavad
Gita. So this must be a parallel passage from that Brahma.
Mm-hmm. What's the
mention? 143.
You interested in this topic?
No, I just, because, I mean, I've heard, I mean, you said Chatya, the first one in the verse, so I wondered.
I have this thing, it's
okay. I'm interested in actually finding out how many.
143 on July 30th,
I've had this discussion. How many of the 400,000 species of life are actually, 400,000 species of human life are actually on this planet?
And where do they fit?
Whether the Yakshas fit,
huh?
Whether the Rakshasha fit, whether the Yakshas
fit. Good question.
What?
Good question. It's been your place, your uniform of life, figuring out. The first thing is to know what it takes to go back to God, and then you worry about the other things later.
I feel
it
might be better off just
in the fall with the G-R-S-1. Anyway, he's just giving these Bahu Rupas so you can enjoy. The tiger wants to enjoy the blood of another animal. E Pavato Kamidanalali that wants to be a meat eater. He would have to take birth as a tiger. And the same way you can desire to get a... So anyway, that's pretty straightforward. That's how it happens. Then he goes on. Again, he uses the dreaming example. You concoct various things and... Golden Mountain. So here he mentions this misconception of mind and I. Then he says the karmi thinks of this world as mine, and the jnani thinks I am everything. So the whole material conception of politics, sociology, philanthropy, altruism, etc., conceived by the conditioned soul, is on the basis of this misconceived I and mine, which are products of a strong desire to enjoy material life, identification with the body, and with the place where the body is obtained, under different conditions of socialism, nationalism, family affection, and so on, are all due to forgetfulness of the real nature of the living entity. The whole misconception of the world of the living entity can be removed by the association. So there's other places, of course, the I in Mamaham is explained a little differently. That is, I means I am the body. And then what is in relationship to the body is mind. But here, as he will amplify in the next, he divides it into the phase of mind. This body is mine, these people are mine, this family is mine. And the I conception refers to, even if one is free of the of being a karmi, one becomes a jnani, and then he says, I am everything. Hunger and opasana. You worship yourself as God, huh? Hunger and opasana. I am everything. So these are the two misconceptions like this. Prabhupada refers to the the bodily identification as under narrow and extended selfishness. Narrow selfishness, as I just identify myself with, you know, my own body. But then there's extended selfishness, my family, my jati, my community, my gang, my social class, my country. These are all considered selfishness by Prabhupada. The Western false ego is pretty much narrowly centered on the individual. But still we see in India the false ego is the family. People identify much more strongly with their families than they do in the West.
Do they have more karmic concepts than...
More what?
A bit more Hindu karmic identification than Western person in the beginning.
I'm sorry, can I understand?
Because the purport said that karmic thinks of this world as mine and the jnani thinks I am everything. So.
Uh-huh.
And you were mentioning that in India people...
Well, because in the West the family is broken down. Remember, we used to have the same family system, what they call a joint family, and called extended family. And then it became what they call the nuclear family, right, which is the mother, father, and children, and now it's subnuclear. So just as a falling apart of sustained human relationships in the West, so naturally you get down to the more and more narrow forms of selfishness.
But it's not like Yanni.
No, it's not like Yanni's. The Prabhupada goes on. And now he discusses this even more here in the next verse. Now, having described the material condition, as soon as the living entity becomes situated in his constitutional glory, Mahimni Svay, in his own glory, glorify life, and begins to enjoy the transcendence beyond time and the material energy, Kala Maya. He takes this to be time and Maya. Ramaiti, he enjoys this. Katta Samohan, because this bewilderment or misconception is gone. He gives up Ubaya, he gives up both of them. Ubayam, Ubayam means both. He gives up both of them, mine and Udaste, that is, becomes fully manifest as the pure self. So here Prabhupada, now he says, he gives this exegesis on I and mine. Two classes of men. The mine is very prominent in the higher state, the misconception of I is prominent. I mean, it's there all the time. In a sense, we should understand that in the misconception, I am the center of enjoyment. I am the center of, I am the enjoyer, and the center of the universe. Even if I believe in God, His function is to serve me. In other words, the materially pious person is the enjoyer, but he thanks God for supplying his enjoyment. But I'm still the enjoyer. God is simply the one I'm careful to obey the rules so I get what that He's happy, so He gives me what I want. Huh?
Or that's
all. Yeah. But I'm still the center. I'm the center of enjoyment. When the misconception of, let's go on.
In the animal state, mind is perceivable, even in the category of cats and dogs, who fight with one another with the same conception of mind. It is my bone. No, it is my bone. They fight over property and things like that. And the same misconception is prominent in the shape of it is my body, it is my house, it is my family, it is my caste, it is my nation, it is my country. And the higher stages of speculative knowledge, the same is now transformed into I am aham brahmasmi, I am, or it is all I am, and so on. They're you know, mantras like that. Soham. Soham asmi. Soham. That I am.
Is that I am that? Soham asmi?
Huh?
What is the translation?
Soham?
Yes. That I am.
That I am.
That, well, soham is just the that I am.
That I, yeah.
Soham asmi is that I am.
Soham asmi.
I am God.
I am one with God, or I am God. It's usually that my body is taken that way. It shows up in the Isha Upanishad. But a different meaning. I am like the sun.
Yourself
is a Purusha.
Yourself
is a Purusha.
Soham asmi.
Huh? But the Lord means in that case, what the way we understand it is that I am like the Lord in quality. He is radiant like the sun, as am I.
Dasoham.
Yeah, well, that's the next sentence. Dasoham. Yeah, Dasoham. That's correct. But in the real significance of I can be realized only when one is situated in the consciousness of I am the eternal servitor of the Lord. So it is not that in the pure state there is no I. That's why the word, you know, in Sanskrit, we have this word. We always call false ego is aham, right? Which is I. Ahamkara. Okay, which always translates as false ego. But it literally means aham is I, and kara means maker. So it means that which gives or produces the sense of I. Gives the sense of I, or individuality. Now, Prabhupada calls this false ego because this ahamkara is a material element for the conditioned souls. This false ego appears in the Mahatattva and then it was divided into three parts. So it's a materialistic ego. And it's all based on turning away from Krishna, so therefore it's not what I am, really. And when this ahankara is gone, it's not that I am not a person anymore. Now I discover who I really am. So there's still an I. But it means I am the servant of Krishna. That's all. So that's why he calls it. You don't see any other word false. Just means really ego. But the Prabhupada wants to point out that we have a real ego. Because the Mayavadis say, when the ahankara is gone, there is no me anymore. I have no identity.
And you're not.
Huh?
Then you're not.
Oh, you're an Orion, right? Well, that's another way of talking. Ultimately, there's no God, there's no worshiper, there's no act of worship.
You got to be really fried to be attracted to that. That's why Prabhupada calls it a form of suicide. You got to be so miserable that this is a great idea. You want to get rid of yourself. You hate yourself so much. And rightfully so. So then Prabhupada said, this misconception of I am the Lord or I am the Supreme is more dangerous than the misconception of mine. And so here he says, there are identity statements. In the Vedas and the Upanishads, they're called Abheda Vakya, the statements of identity. And there are also in the Upanishads statements of the supremacy of the Lord. So it becomes the job of the sage to reconcile these two statements. Someone says that the Lord is great and I am the servant, and the others to say that I and the Lord are one. And the both statements are there. So he says this. And of course, there's different ways of doing it. The way of the Maya body is to say that the statements of identity are the real true statements, and whenever they speak of the Lord, they're just conventional. There's words in Sanskrit for this, paramarthika and vyavaharika, conventional speech and paramarthika, real, the true sense of the term. And Shankaracharya does this neat thing, but he trickily sets up two layers of meaning and fits everything into one or the other, so his philosophy is there by just discounting the conventional idea. And he says Brahman can be viewed in two ways. One is an object of avidya and one is an object of vidya. When Brahman is an object of avidya, there are the categories of God, the worshipper, and the act of worship. But when Brahman becomes an object of knowledge, then these three categories disappear. That's what he says. The other way to understand this, and which makes more sense, so the Upanishad says you don't discount half of it, is to say they're both true. And there's both oneness and difference simultaneously. Qualitatively one, you are Brahman, but there is, as the Bhagavad Gita says, there's Param Brahman. In the Bhagavad Gita, it's very clear, and it's nice to know, I can point out to you, that the Bhagavad Gita, as being translated into English, is becoming more clear. Because the Bhagavad Gita used to be, in all its translations, it was a totally Mayavad document. Because the most popular translation for many years used in the schools was by this Ramakrishna Mission Swami from Hollywood. What was his name?
Prabhavananda,
assisted by Christopher Isherwood, a British writer, a notorious homosexual, but was interested in Vedanta and helped him. So that became the main major Bhagavad Gita. Mm-hmm. And then there was the other one was Radhakrishna, Dr. Radhakrishnan's. That Prabhupada used his translations, actually before he had his own Gita, he used his translation because he said the translations were all right. But in the purport, he would just directly contradict. You can understand a lot of Prabhupada's early Bhagavad Gita lectures because he's preaching against the purports. Especially when Krishna says, you know, man mana bhava bhakta, and then Dr. Radhakrishna says, is not the Krishna the person who wants to surrender, but to that which is unborn within Krishna.
Inside Krishna.
Inside Krishna. Yes. And then Prabhupada said, they don't know, there's no difference between Krishna inside and out. They're thinking him as this conditioned soul. So
So, but now it's become much more theistic, mostly, you know, since the 60s. And, for example, the translation of Barbara Stoller Miller, she definitely has a footnote to point out that the last verse of, what is the 14th, that Brahmano hi pratishtaham, it means exactly what it says, that I am the basis or foundation and support of Brahman, that Krishna is prior to or above Brahman.
Thank God.
Yeah, so it's happening. That's, you know, I think that has something to do with the influence of Srila Prabhupada.
Did Pinyas and Pula happen to them?
Huh?
They regret that they are not Hindu at all.
Who?
Rankrishna Mishra. They declare totally.
Yeah.
That we are not at all Hindu. We are not Hindu. We have no time. We are just Hindu. It was a big disturbance.
Since when? When they started
in India? 15 years ago.
Oh, really?
It was a very good disturbance.
Mm-hmm.
And they have more than 4 or 5 lakhs initiated devotees.
Mm-hmm.
And they are on hunger strike. Then by court they became Hindu again.
Hindu, huh?
Yeah.
Sarva upadi vinirmuktam, huh?
No. Hunger strike in India.
Anyway. So, undoubtedly there's oneness of the living entity with the Lord in many respects, but ultimately the living entity is subordinate to the Lord and he is constitutively meant for satisfying the senses of the Lord. The idea in transcendence is there is still sense gratification. It's not that sense gratification goes away, but the center of the sense gratification is Krishna. And in relationship with Krishna, as parts and parcels, part and parcel of Krishna, whenever Krishna is satisfied, we are satisfied. And that's what happened. But definitely the sense gratification. So then Prabhupada has just a discussion against this idea that I am God. If the living entity been equal in all respects, why was he put under the influence of Maya? He's under the control of material nature. I know what they say, as they used to say in the 60s, it's my lila. I said, that's your lila, to be walking around Philadelphia in a dirty pair of blue jeans with pimples all over your face? Can't you do better than that?
We used to have these conversations with these guys.
That's your lila.
Were they very funny? What was their advice?
Who are you to judge? But anyway, this is a useless talk. But because they cannot, they have to grow old, they have to die, they become diseased, you know. Is this Leela? Is that what you're doing for fun?
And then they don't even realize that the real life when it's supposed to be completely like composed, whether they scold it or pray.
No, you know, well, people don't know whether. You don't even see the Maya bodies. Can a living entity who claims to be as good as the Supreme Lord control material nature? I knew guys used to take LSD, stand up on the hillside, and claim they were doing it. They were making the planets move and that. Well, unfortunately, I had to take a pill to do it, but. And so by some kind of dependence. The foolish eye would reply that he would do so in the future. But if you could do it in the future, well, why can't you do it now? Why are you now under control of material nature? Uh, So these things are all here. These are in this. In his conditional state, the living entity is the servant of the illusory Maya. See, you're the servant anyway. At that point, we've asked the people. We say to people, surrender to Krishna, but it's not like they don't, like they really have a choice. You just choose how you want to surrender, the nasty way or the nice way. Because Prabhupada states this, that the materialists meet Krishna in the form of death. And that's when they surrender to him. They have to acknowledge his power. By a devotee surrendering to Krishna is the nice way. And we give up also everything, all the illusory idea that we had any possessions, that something belonged to me. That sometimes feels like death. There's the death of the false ego, squealing and protesting sometimes. This is a nice statement. It's like the one is face to face with the Supreme Lord. It's like being facing the sun. Huh? He's free from all illusions. And one who is not so is in the darkness of illusory Maya. You turn away from Krishna and you stand in your own shadow. Any other questions about this?
Yes. That experience you were talking about, having to feel badly.
Yes.
Is that what they call the dark night of the soul?
I guess it's used loosely that way. It wasn't such a dark night. The dark night of the soul comes from the mystical writings of Saint John of the Cross. And for him, it's a phase in mystic advancement when you know you have become, and it's not something that a devotee will go through, but in his theology, there's a phase where you become detached from or removed from material reality. You've given up your attachments to the material world. But still, you have no footing in the spiritual world. Matter is not, you don't value matter, material relationship, but still, you haven't had an experience of the divine yet. You know it's there, but it hasn't happened yet. And it causes the dark night of the soul. And then in that dark night, he says, then Jesus comes. That's his experience. It will be a little different for us. Because we connect right away with transcendence. So that is as now it's used all kinds of ways in a loose way by people. But this actually where it's come from. Yeah.
In the purport there is one sentence, it says that in his conditional life the living entity is servant of the illusory Maya, and in his liberated state he's the pure, unqualified servant of the Lord. Is it just the same? Pure, unqualified servant of the Lord.
What's wrong with that? You don't like the pure part or the
unqualified? No, unqualified.
Unqualified.
Doesn't mean
you know. No, he said without any qualifications. Sometimes you say, oh, well, unqualified. When you put conditions on something, sometimes it's a qualified agreement, but this. It's just ways. You can read it a different way, the unconditional servant of the Lord. No conditions.
Not like in other words.
Unqualified.
Yeah. Not like in other words, I serve Krishna from 9 to 5 or
yeah, right. Yeah. It's just this way the word is used. Yeah?
I was gonna say, I just looked this up now, relating this back to the question and then answering. And you addressed it briefly, and I don't remember exactly what you said. Because the question was, is it Yadrichchika or is it Hetuna?
Uh-huh.
The Vaisnava Hetu. Vishnu, I agree with what Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says, and he says that this answer is saying that it's Yadrishtika. In other words, that the jiva's coming in contact with the material body is not caused by any external factor. He's bringing it in, and particularly in this verse, where kind of the element of bhakti comes in. He takes it as these two independent things. You either independently choose to go into maya, or you without any external cause, or without any external cause, to take the bhakti.
Yeah, that's another way to look at it. I can see Prabhupada seems to say the cause is that you turned away from Krishna, but if you go down to that, you see, the interesting thing about free will is its resemblance to the idea of chance. Especially in modern physics, they have this notion of absolute chance, which is the notion of a causeless event. And it's a very hard thing to conceive of. Because usually when we say chance, you know, I take a coin, but I flip it like this, heads or tails, right? 50% heads, 50% tails on the average. But it's actually, if I knew all the causes, if I knew how high my thumb is from the floor, if I knew the angle of my thumb, if I knew the exact force of my thumb, if I knew the resilience of the floor, I could predict, knowing all the initial conditions, where the head or tail sitting on my thumb, how it would fall. So a lot of times when we say chance, it just means there are causes we don't know about. But it's not literally causeless. But in modern physics, in quantum mechanics, so far, things happen for no cause. Little bits of things happen. Now, some scientists don't like this and say there must be some hidden variable somewhere. Others say you just have to accept it. But really, our experience of something that's like that, where you just have a sheer addition to the determinateness of reality, it's not there in the anesthetic condition, in the antecedent conditions, is what we call free will. So when we say free will, yadvitschaya, that is to say something that happens of its own accord. So if you refer to the free will of the living entity, this falling has a cause, that is covering the maya, that has a cause, the decision of the Lord subsequent to his turning away from the Lord, and that turning away, he does it on his own. He wasn't forced to. He just did it. He had the opportunity, and he had his freedom. Yeah? So it's a perfectly plausible way to look at it. In that case, you could say the answer is, well, it's both.
So then how we deal with this, I mean, it's, you know, there's this question, and Krishna says, one who comes back,
The way I believe that Prabhupada says this is that you don't make the same mistake twice. Basically, you've learned your lesson. When you go up to the higher planets, you got to come down. Your good karma runs out, and down you go. But when you go to Krishna Loka, you don't have to come back down again. And so you've learned your lesson. He Prabhupada says the potential is still there. Your freedom has not gone away. But somehow or other, and I think he said maybe once in a while somebody does it twice. Yeah. Some idiot. But overwhelmingly, you don't need to. But the freedom is always there, because Prabhupada says you never lose your freedom.
So that posits that when we go to the spiritual world, there'll be some remembrance of our...
Something. Well, sometimes, you know, you don't have to have an active remembrance.
I mean, there's many things that we've had an experience that conditions, you know, or controls the way we behave, and we don't remember it, but it still has its effect. So somehow or other, it's had its effect on us. Or you may say, yeah, I don't measure that. I don't know what you know or don't know. You know Krishna and love of Krishna, you know.
Yeah, but it seems, then it would also seem to me if you remember your fall into the spiritual realm, that would cause some sadness, even if you're in the material world. I mean, if you remember your fall into the material world, and you go back to the spiritual world, it would cause some sense of sadness in the spiritual world.
I don't know. I don't think there's any sadness there. You're just so happy to be back. Like Jaya Vijaya, you know, okay, if we did our thing, now we're really glad to be back. You must appreciate it better. Okay? Thank you very much. Prabhupada.